All right, Angelina, let me start with a confession. I have this incredibly complex, let's call it a love-hate relationship, with the word toxins.
Oh, tell me about it, Adan. It's such a loaded word, isn't it? Like you hear it, and immediately either your eyes roll or you go into panic mode. There's no in between.
Exactly. I love it, honestly, because it captures something really real. Modern life, our environment, our diet, they all come with exposures that our grandparents just didn't have to deal with. There's a genuine truth there that we need to address.
Yeah, like you can't just ignore the elephant in the room. We are exposed to more stuff than ever before. But then on the flip side.
On the flip side, I absolutely hate it because it's become this spooky, vague umbrella term. It's used to make people feel like they're one green smoothie away from total disaster, or that everything is toxic. And that's just not helpful. It's paralyzing, actually.
Totally, it creates so much anxiety. Like, oh my God, I just touched a plastic container. Am I going to die? And you just want to scream, no, probably not. We need a calm, practical approach, right? No fear-mongering.
Precisely. No fear-mongering, no everything is toxic, no doom-scrolling. Today, we want to talk about toxicity properly. We'll offer a calm, practical way to think about it, especially heavy metals, with enough simple science to make it credible, and enough real-life language to make it actually usable for anyone listening.
And I think a lot of people tuning in right now might be feeling off. You know that feeling, right? Like something's just not quite right, and you're wondering if toxicity is part of the story. Maybe you've tried all the usual things and you're still stuck.
Yeah, if that sounds like you, here's our promise for today. By the end of this episode, you should be able to say one of three things with more confidence. You'll either feel like, okay, this probably isn't my main issue, or this is possible, it's worth a basic assessment. Or finally, yep, this is a strong suspect, time to test or get support.
That's such a great promise because it gives people a clear path forward instead of just, oh, now I'm more scared. And I think a huge part of that calm approach starts with understanding something really fundamental. Your body isn't helpless.
Absolutely. This is probably one of the biggest misconceptions out there. People think detox is something you do once in a while, like a spring clean for your house, right? You schedule it, you buy some special products, you do it for a week, and then you're done for the year.
Yeah, like you're going to magically purge everything in 7 days and then you're pristine. It's almost like a diet mentality, but for toxins.
Totally. But in reality, your body is detoxing all the time. It's a continuous 24/7 process. It's built for this. Its main players are your liver, your gut, your kidneys, your lungs, and even, to a minor extent, your skin.
So it's not like you just suddenly turn on a detox switch. Your body is always on detox mode, just in different capacities. Can you break down what each of those main organs is doing?
Sure. Your liver is, of course, the superstar. It's processing and packaging compounds so they can leave safely. Then you've got your gut and bile system, which is one of the main exit routes for fat-soluble waste. Your kidneys handle water-soluble waste, sending it out through urine. Your lungs expel volatile compounds through your breath. And while your skin does play a minor role via sweat, it's really not the main highway for detox, like some people might claim.
That's a good distinction. I think a lot of people think they can just sweat out everything. And when people talk about phase one and phase two detox, that's usually referring to the liver, right?
Exactly. That's liver metabolism, a whole set of enzyme-driven steps that transform chemicals so the body can eliminate them. In simple terms, phase one often modifies a compound, making it a bit more reactive, actually. And then phase two steps in and binds it to something, like glutathione, to make it easier and safer to remove.
Ah, glutathione. That word comes up a lot in the wellness world. It sounds super important. What exactly is its role?
It really is super important. Think of glutathione like a biochemical helper. It's one of the body's major protective molecules. It can neutralize reactive compounds, essentially disarming them, and then supports their safe handling and removal from the body. So you want plenty of glutathione hanging around.
Okay, so the goal then isn't to force detox or go on some extreme cleanse. It's really about stopping the overload and supporting the systems your body already has in place to do its job. Is that fair to say?
Couldn't have said it better myself. We want to optimize, not overpower. Now let's talk about where people often get stuck when they're wondering about toxicity. And that's usually looking at individual symptoms.
Ah, tell me about it. Someone reads a list of toxic symptoms online and suddenly they have all of them. And it can be misleading because so many symptoms are so common, right?
Exactly. The symptoms of toxicity are often, frankly, boring and nonspecific. That doesn't mean they aren't real, but it does mean a single symptom can't prove anything. What really raises my suspicion is when I see a pattern.
A pattern? Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So what kind of patterns are we looking for?
We look for three main patterns. First, pattern A, multi-system symptoms. We're not just talking about one complaint, but a cluster of issues across different body systems. Think brain and mood issues like fog, anxiety, or irritability. Then add gut issues like bloating or irregular bowel movements, maybe skin issues like rashes, persistent fatigue that doesn't bounce back, and sleep problems like being wired but tired or waking up at 3 a.m. If you've got complaints in three or more of those areas, that's a red flag.
Yeah, that's definitely more suspicious than just I'm tired, because everyone gets tired sometimes. But if you're tired and your brain's foggy and your gut is always acting up, that's a different story. What's pattern B?
Pattern B is chronic and stubborn. These are symptoms that have dragged on for months or even years. And crucially, they don't respond well to the usual basics. I'm talking about getting enough sleep, making diet tweaks, trying some general supplements, or living a generally healthy lifestyle. If you're doing all the right things and still feel stuck, that's a big clue.
That's such a key point because so many people just feel like they're failing when the basics don't work, but it might just mean there's something else at play. And pattern C.
Pattern C is exposure history. You don't necessarily need some dramatic exposure event, like a huge chemical spill. Even low to moderate exposures, repeated over time, can matter significantly. Especially if your nutrition isn't great, your gut health is off, you're under a lot of stress, or maybe your genetics make you a bit less resilient.
So it's not just about the intensity of one exposure, but the cumulative effect, especially if your body's not operating at 100% to begin with. That makes so much sense. So when those three patterns align, multi-system conflict, exposure, that's when you stop guessing and start assessing, right?
Precisely. It's time to dig deeper. Now let's go through some of the classic signs people report, in plain English. Again, this is not a diagnosis list. It's more of a, does this sound like you, list.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's start with brain and nervous system clues, because those are super common when people talk about brain fog, right?
Absolutely. Things like brain fog, slow thinking, poor focus, memory lapses, you know those why did I walk into this room moments, but they're happening all day long. Irritability, low mood, anxiety, sometimes even tingling or numbness, a tremor, or just feeling wired. And of course, sleep disruption often falls into this category. These are very commonly discussed in heavy metal exposure contexts, especially with things like lead and mercury. Lead, for instance, can cause early neurological symptoms like irritability, headaches, and poor attention.
Wow, that's a wide range. I know so many people who experience some of those, and they often attribute it to just being stressed or getting older. What about gut and elimination clues? That seems like a direct route for toxicity symptoms.
Definitely. Here, we're talking about bloating, gas, nausea, persistent constipation or diarrhea that keeps cycling, or food sensitivities that seem to multiply out of nowhere. A big one is also feeling worse when you try cleanses or strong supplements. That's a major clue that your elimination pathways might be struggling.
That's so interesting about feeling worse with cleanses. I've heard that from so many people, and they just think, oh, I must be super toxic. But what you're saying is, it could be a sign your body isn't properly getting rid of what's already there.
Exactly. A key idea here is that if your gut is sluggish, the body can actually recycle compounds it was trying to send out. This is part of what we call enterohepatic recycling, especially with bile-related compounds. Slow transit time means more reabsorption, which puts an extra burden on the system.
That's a really good way to put it. So if your gut's like a traffic jam, things are just going to build up. What about energy and resilience? Fatigue is another one everyone complains about.
Oh, absolutely. Here we see fatigue that just doesn't match your lifestyle. You're sleeping, you're eating well, but you're still wiped out. Crashes after meals or mid-afternoon. Needing caffeine just to feel human. And a big one for some people is exercise intolerance. You're completely wiped out for days after what should have been a normal workout.
I've definitely experienced that exercise intolerance myself when I've been feeling run down. It's like your body just can't recover. What about skin and hair clues? Are those common?
They can be, yeah. Things like unexplained rashes, itching, or flare-ups. Acne that just doesn't respond to any of the usual changes you make. Hair thinning, brittle hair, or weird nail changes. Again, these aren't exclusive to toxicity, but when they stack with those other patterns, they become more interesting.
And finally, people often talk about just feeling generally inflamed. What does that actually look like as a clue for potential toxicity?
That's a really good way to put it. Inflammation vibes. People will describe feeling generally inflamed or having achy joints without an obvious cause, a puffy face, recurrent headaches, or just feeling like my body overreacts to everything. Again, none of these are solely toxicity issues, but if you're experiencing several of them, especially alongside an exposure history, it's definitely something to consider.
Okay, so we've covered the patterns and the symptoms. Now for the part that I think most people skip, and it's so crucial, the exposure checklist. Because if you're wondering about toxicity, you have to ask, could I realistically be getting exposed?
Exactly. It grounds the whole conversation. Here are some common heavy metal-related exposure buckets. First, lead. It's still a thing, unfortunately. Exposure can come from older housing, especially paint and dust if it's being renovated. Certain jobs like construction, battery work, or auto repair, and other environmental sources. Many adults don't even feel obviously sick, which is why it can be so easily missed.
That's a scary thought, that you could be exposed and not even know it. What about mercury? That's the one everyone thinks about with fish.
Yeah, mercury is often linked to seafood choices and broader environmental exposures. It's well known for nervous system effects at higher levels. Then there's arsenic, which can come from contaminated water, especially in certain regions, and sometimes food. Long-term exposure to inorganic arsenic can lead to characteristic skin changes and other serious health outcomes.
Water is a big one that people often overlook, just assuming their tap water is fine. And finally, cadmium?
Cadmium is often associated with smoking, both direct and secondhand, and certain industrial sources. It's looked at for kidney and bone effects over time, so it's more of a long-game exposure. If this is a main concern, it's really worth discussing appropriate medical testing with a clinician.
So the goal here isn't to perfectly identify the source with 100% certainty, but just to get a reasonable yes, possibly, versus honestly, probably not, right?
Exactly. Just a realistic assessment. And to help with that, I've got my go-to self-assessment, a 10-question checklist. You can literally score this 0 to 10. Give yourself 1 point for each yes.
Okay, I'm ready. Listeners, grab a mental notepad or an actual one, and let's go through these.
First question. Do I have symptoms in 3 or more body systems? Brain, gut, skin, energy, sleep. Yes or no?
Okay, check. Next?
Have these symptoms lasted 3 months or more? Second point. Third, do I feel like I've tried the basics, healthy diet, sleep, exercise, and I'm still stuck?
That still stuck feeling is so frustrating, right? All right, those are 3. What's number 4?
Do I have a known exposure risk? That's things like older housing, a job with exposure, lots of high mercury fish, or concerns about my water quality. That's 4. Question 5. Do I react strongly to supplements or cleanses like detox makes me worse?
Oh, that's a big one. I've definitely seen that in myself and others. What about number 6?
Number 6. Do I have frequent headaches, brain fog, or mood swings that just feel out of proportion? 7. Do I have persistent digestive issues coupled with irregular bowel habits? So, not just a one-off, but ongoing.
Those are so classic. So many people normalize irregular bowel habits, but it's really not normal to be constipated or have diarrhea constantly. Number 8.
Number 8. Do I have unexplained skin flare-ups or persistent itching? 9. Do I have unusual fatigue or low resilience, where even a small stress just knocks me over for days? And finally, question 10. Do I have a history of multiple exposures, maybe from travel, occupational settings, or even hobbies like soldering or pottery?
Okay, so you've tallied up your points. What do these scores mean, Adan?
Here's how I interpret it. If you scored 0 to 2, toxicity is possible, but it's probably not a leading suspect for your issues. If you're at 3 to 5, it's definitely worth a more structured assessment. And if you scored 6 to 10, that's a strong case for considering testing and getting support.
That's such a clear breakdown. It's not a medical diagnosis, but it really gives you a reality check and helps you decide if this path is even worth exploring, without falling into that paranoia trap we talked about earlier.
Exactly. And if you want something even more structured than our 10 questions, there's the Heavy Metal Toxicity Questionnaire from Detox Metals. It lists common symptoms and gives you a score range from minimal to very high. It's another quick way to turn that vague, I feel gross, into a measurable pattern.
That's super helpful. I think for a lot of people, just having that measurable pattern gives them a sense of control and clarity, and it helps you decide what to do next, whether it's lifestyle changes, a specific protocol, or moving straight to testing.
Right. But before we dive into testing, I want to keep everyone really grounded here. It's crucial to understand when toxicity is not the best explanation, because a lot of those toxicity symptoms we just talked about, they're also classic signs of other very common issues.
Oh, absolutely. It's not a one-size-fits-all answer. Like brain fog and fatigue could be so many things. What are some of the big ones we should rule out?
Huge ones. Think sleep apnea. That's a massive cause of brain fog and fatigue. Thyroid issues, whether it's underactive or overactive. Iron deficiency, or deficiencies in other key nutrients like B12 or folate. Blood sugar swings, which can make you crash and feel terrible. Chronic stress and burnout are massive contributors. And even things like mold exposure or gut infections and dysbiosis. All of these can mimic toxicity symptoms.
Wow, so if you're checking boxes on fatigue and brain fog, don't just jump straight to metals. It sounds like the smarter approach is to ask, have I ruled out the obvious stuff first?
Exactly. And you don't have to pick one theory like it's a football team, right? You can investigate in parallel. Address the sleep, check your thyroid, look at your blood sugar. If those are all clear and you still have that pattern, then heavy metals become a stronger contender.
That's such a pragmatic approach. Okay, so let's say someone's gone through the self-assessment, they've considered those other common causes, and they've got that symptom pattern and a plausible exposure history. What's the calm way to actually test?
This is where testing can be a really smart move, because it moves you from that emotional place of I feel toxic to actual information. Here's what we actually measured. The HMD hair mineral analysis and toxic metals test on detox metals is a good example of this.
Okay, so for people who might not be familiar with it, what exactly does a hair mineral analysis measure?
It's quite comprehensive. It measures 8 toxic or heavy metals: antimony, arsenic, aluminum, beryllium, cadmium, lead, mercury, and uranium. But it doesn't stop there. It also measures 29 essential minerals and trace elements like calcium, magnesium, zinc, copper, sodium, potassium. And crucially, it gives you mineral ratios, like sodium to potassium or zinc to copper, which tell you a lot about your body's functional state. Plus, you get toxic metal to mineral ratios, which can indicate if a certain heavy metal might be displacing an essential mineral.
That's a lot of information in one test, and it uses a sensitive lab method, right?
Yes, it uses ICP-MS, which is inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry. It's a very sensitive and reliable lab method for measuring trace elements at those low levels.
Okay, so what is hair testing really good for, in normal person language? What's its superpower?
Its superpower is that it's useful as a screening tool and for tracking trends over time. It can show which elements are present in the hair over the growth window, which is roughly a 3-month period, and how your overall mineral patterns look. These patterns can tell you a lot about your metabolic state, stress response, and general resilience. So it's a good broad snapshot.
That's a great distinction, screening and tracking trends, but I think it's equally important to be clear about what hair testing is not, so people have realistic expectations and don't panic or misinterpret results.
Absolutely. Hair levels are not always a perfect marker of internal body burden, meaning the total amount stored in your tissues. Results can also be influenced by external contamination, like hair dyes or even environmental exposure on the hair itself. That's why these results should always be interpreted carefully by someone knowledgeable, and when needed, followed up with appropriate clinical testing, like blood or urine tests, depending on the specific situation.
That's really important context. You're not saying that to downplay hair testing, but to make sure people use it intelligently, right? It's about smart interpretation, not panic.
Exactly. So, how do you use the test without spiraling into anxiety? Here's the approach I like, and it really helps keep you sane. Step 1. Use those symptoms and exposure patterns to decide if testing even makes sense. Our 10-question self-check or the detox metals questionnaire helps you with that.
So don't just test blindly because you heard someone mention heavy metals. Make sure there's a good reason first. What's step 2?
Step 2. Collect properly. Follow the official collection instructions very carefully. This matters more than people think. External contamination is a real thing. Step 3. Read your results like a detective, not a drama queen.
Oh, detective, not drama queen. I love that. What does that mean in practice?
Instead of immediately thinking, oh no, I have mercury, I'm doomed, ask yourself these questions. Do my symptoms actually fit with what the test shows? Do my exposures fit? Are essential minerals depleted that normally help my body's resilience? Do the mineral ratios suggest my body is under stress? Look for that whole picture.
So, connect the dots, basically. Don't just isolate one number. What's the final step to avoid spiraling?
Think in trends, not snapshots. One test is a photo of what's happening, but two tests, especially with a consistent plan in between, that becomes a story. It shows you if what you're doing is actually making a difference.
That's such a calm and practical way to approach it, and I think that ties back to what you said at the beginning, supporting your body's natural systems. So even before testing, or while you're waiting for results, what are some of those non-paranoid detox basics that everyone should be doing anyway?
Great question. These are the boring steps that just make everything work better no matter what. First, protein with meals. Your liver uses amino acids from protein for a lot of its processing work, especially in phase two. So, get enough good quality protein.
Simple but effective. What's next?
Fiber and regular bowel movements. You want waste leaving daily, not recirculating and putting more burden on your system. So, eat plenty of fiber-rich foods and make sure things are moving smoothly.
Yeah, if things aren't moving, nothing else is going to work as well. Hydration, I assume, is also key?
Absolutely. Hydration and essential minerals. Detox pathways are chemistry, and chemistry needs raw materials to function properly. So drink enough clean water and ensure you're getting your minerals from a diverse diet or quality supplements.
And probably the most basic but often overlooked one, sleep.
Oh, sleep is non-negotiable. Your nervous system and all those precious detox enzymes do not love all-nighters. Prioritize your sleep. It's when your body does a lot of its repair and cleanup work.
And finally, lowering obvious exposures. That's a no-brainer, but sometimes the hardest to implement, right?
Yeah, that's being proactive. Use a water filter if needed. Make safer seafood choices if mercury is a concern. Reduce your exposure to smoke, solvents, and artificial fragrances. These aren't glamorous steps, but they are extremely effective at reducing the load on your system.
So those are the fundamentals, but it's also important to know when to stop researching online and actually get professional medical help. When are those red flags where you absolutely need to see a doctor?
Crucial point. If you suspect a high exposure event, like a work accident, a significant industrial exposure, or you develop severe symptoms very suddenly after a known source, that is not a blog problem, that's a medical evaluation problem. Go see a doctor immediately.
Yeah, don't try to self-treat something like that. That's a medical emergency. Are there any specific severe neurological symptoms that warrant immediate attention?
Absolutely. If you develop severe neurological symptoms like sudden confusion, severe unexplained weakness, a severe tremor that's new, or new seizures, do not self-diagnose. Get immediate medical attention. These are serious symptoms that need professional assessment, not self-treatment.
That's a really important distinction, and I appreciate you laying that out so clearly. So, what's the one takeaway you want everyone listening to remember from today's conversation?
The takeaway I want you to remember is this. Toxicity isn't a ghost story. It's not everything is toxic and we're doomed. It's a practical, solvable question. Do my symptoms and my exposure history justify looking deeper?
And if the answer is yes, then do it calmly.
Exactly. Start with a questionnaire to get a clearer picture. Consider objective testing, like the HMD hair mineral analysis and toxic metals test, if it makes sense. And most importantly, interpret those results as patterns and trends, not as a reason to panic. Empower yourself with information, not fear.
That's beautifully put, Adan. It's all about clarity and confidence, not conspiracy and fear. Thanks so much for breaking down such a complex topic in such a practical way today.
My pleasure, Angelina. And to all our listeners, we hope this gives you a much calmer and more actionable perspective on understanding your own health journey. Until next time, stay well.